Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Monday, February 17, 2025. The acting governor of Western Equatorial State says he's protecting the family of the former SPLM-IO governor who has escaped from Yambio last week.
The people, I'm protecting his family, the wife, and the children. You know very well, governor was relieved. He's supposed to remain in his residence according to the security so that he does not run.
And people living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan say President Donald Trump's executive order to stop funds to USAID projects in the country has affected them.
The organization really helped us, because I'm continuing with my drug. But now, when the organization stops, then it is going to affect us. Maybe if the funding are not there, then the medicine will be finishing. Then how are we going to survive? It's going to affect us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Before we proceed, we would like to apologize to our listeners that we are experiencing some technical problems here in the studio, but nevertheless, we will proceed with the news. The acting governor of Western Equatorial State, Daniel Badagbo Ringbisa, says he is protecting allies of the former governor of the state, Alfred Futuyo, who escaped to the bush after President Salva Kiir issued a decree firing the former governor. Badagbo says calm has returned to Yambio town after residents celebrated the removal of the SPLM-IO governor.
What I've done so far is I've been able to calm the situation in Yambio, and Yambio is now peaceful. For the past 2 days now, there is no problem in Yambio. Regarding the protest in Izo, actually I've seen it. People have been protesting, but it has been a peaceful protest. According to what I've heard, it's not a violent one. And I think the population were the one talking, and this is not politically motivated at all. And of course, what they are talking about, though they did not inform me of doing it, but they have done it with a peaceful move, which of course we are giving freedom for people to do their peaceful demonstration if they have already discussed with the security there and they allow them to do so. I cannot object to any peaceful protest because they are right to do so.
And in your written statement, you had mentioned that the state government has given protection to people who felt they were vulnerable in Yambio County. Why should a South Sudanese be vulnerable in his own country?
The people are protecting his family, the wife, and the children. You know very well, governor was relieved. He's supposed to remain in his residence according to the security so that he does not run. But in an incident whereby the governor, after leaving, just a few minutes escapes. And of course, you know, the government we are having now is a unity government, which the political parties government is called a unity government. Different political parties who signed the peace agreement are the one who formed this government. And now if the governor escapes and he still has people in the bush, so we do not know where exactly he has gone. And that's why his family, the 10 children and the wife, felt actually feared because they were hiding, actually. They were hiding due to the fear of unknown, but nobody from government has a problem with them. That's why I have to assure them and exactly implement what you have just said. Government has to accord protection to the people.
In the same statement, you were saying you made several attempts to talk to the former governor to come back. Where is he?
Totally, I don't know where he is and the location he is in. But has a partner in peace and has a person who could not have any problem with him. And the changes that happened with the decree in the normal government duties to change leadership, to change anyone they can change. So this has not warrant him to run away. He's running away can be seen in many ways because we don't know where he is. And of course, he has forces with him who are not yet integrated. So what I must do is to find a way of especially dialogue with him to assure him of our protection and to see how we can build the trust through communication with him so that he can come back. Because when he comes back and he says here people see him, people will not fear. The fear people are having because he's not around, and he was once division sector commander of the IO, and of course we don't know where he is, and that's why the whole town has been panicking.
Yeah, Governor Badagbo, how would you expect him to come back when he was removed? The whole town erupted in celebration and dancing for 2 days.
Because I did not hear from the decree which was issued by the Excellency removing him that a warrant of arrest was issued for him. I have not heard that. I've only seen that he has been relieved as any person. I was once a governor, I was also relieved. But if people were protesting, they did not turn violent. They never went to his house. They never said they want to either to lynch him. They never mentioned anything. They were jubilating for reasons known to them. And of course, they have the right as a population to either celebrate or to do whatever they are doing. Because South Sudan is a democratic country. We must also need people to express their views. And actually, we don't have any problem with that. But the government is the one having a total political will to call their former leader to come back and also to accord him the necessary protection he needs, and he must stay among his people with dignity. That's the reason why we have to talk to him and also to arrange the fear that can be in the hearts of the people that the former leader who was a governor has escaped to the bush, is still there as forces who are not yet integrated. What does that mean? Therefore, to arrange that kind of fear in the hearts of the people, we must do everything in our capacity to bring sanity to the people who have the tranquility through talking to him, also knowing where he could be, but we have not known where he is up to now. But we continue to persuade him, to talk to him, so that he can come. And we also ask the leadership to engage him, especially the IO leadership in Juba. Dr. Riek Machar should engage him, because we don't want any insecurity in the area again. So they should talk to him very well, and he can be able to explain to the leadership, basically the IO leadership, the reason as to why he escaped. But we are not more into that, but we want him back so that the fear can go away in the hearts of the people.
Talking about fear, there was a video making rounds of one SSPDF senior officer called James Nando, who said in the video that his forces has captured the village of Lirongu. Could you tell us what is happening in that part of Western Equatorial State?
I've called James Nando to come to me and to explain to me about the video. Though I have not yet seen the video, but I want explanation about this video. I talked to him on phone. He told me he was not the one who posted the video. I think one of maybe other soldiers who are the one who posted. But what I know about Rongu is not a autonomous area. Even today I was speaking to Dr. Rek about it. Yeah, Rongu is a health center and it has a school and the headquarters of a Payam, which is approximately 75 or 73 kilometers away from the autonomous site. But Rongu has been made either in the barracks, or I don't know what it is. And according to the international law, no soldier is supposed to occupy a health center. No soldier is supposed to occupy a school. But Rongu is actually a health center which has been there a long time in the memorial.
I'm aware that Lirongu had a leprosy center in the 70s. I'm aware of that health center.
Exactly. That leprosy and sleeping sickness center is the one that has been occupied by these forces. So the forces now must all go to the containment site. You see, around that place, there was an assembly area. It was not a permanent barracks when we are implementing the peace agreement.
I saw your video yesterday. You were visiting markets in Yambio town and assuring the locals that all is well. At the same time, there are reports that 35 wounded soldiers were brought to Yambio hospital. Where were those soldiers wounded?
Not really. What happened is some 9 kilometers away from Yambio, people slept in Yambio with no gunshot. And since this incident started, we have not lost anyone. No house has been burnt. But what happened today is an isolated change happened in a place called Soura, whereby some two unknown gunmen actually appeared and they shot two people on a border, and one man who is 65 years and a 24-year-old border boy was shot. Then they sent our forces and they were police burden to the hospital, and unfortunately the old man of 65 years succumbed to the wounds he sustained through what happened in that area. But within Gambio, security is well built up, and also we have assured our people. I was living yesterday assuring people, and people are responding to this because people slept very well in Gambio, and people also resumed their work today. And market is functional, everything is okay. Children are already in school, and today I'm even talking to you right now. I'm in the office, and the office is running up as normal. But of course, you know, we are not gunmen, we cannot control everything, and we will try all what we can to provide security. As I'm thinking, I've also deployed the police to that area where these people were shot. Now the place already police is there to provide order and security and sanity to that area so that facilities can return to the area.
Yes, and you, in your message to people in the markets, you assured them that those who committed atrocities, those who were looting properties, were not part of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. I mean, who else could be armed in the town and running around with guns? I mean, I don't understand this situation.
Exactly. Equally, I did not understand it at the beginning either. But what happened is we have already done some arrests. We know that there are some deserters who are once in the bush, also there, but when they returned, they did not bring themselves to integration, and they still remain with the remnants of, you know, military attires. They were once also in rebels, others deserted even the army at times, but these people, they don't belong to any force, and therefore these are the ones who took advantage of what happened, and they did not even steal people within town, but they were targeting people whom they think they are wealthy, whom they think they have money. How this money they targeted it so that they can steal motorbikes and some vehicles and whatever. But the good thing, I've arrested a number of these people, and of course also some of the motorbikes they picked and some of the property they stole, we have been able to recover them, and we have returned them to their respective owners very well. Even they stole some government vehicles from some militants, like the one I said, some militants who ran away for fear. These people ran to their places and stole their things. So what has happened this morning, even the very forces people are accusing that they have followed these people, they have arrested them, and even we have recovered from them even three vehicles, which has been ended to me now from these criminals, and we are going to arrest them before competent court of law.
That's Daniel Badagbo Ringbisa, the acting governor of Western Equatoria. He spoke with me from Yambio earlier today. Again, we apologize for some technical problems we're experiencing in the studio here. Nevertheless, we will continue with the show. Authorities in Nasir County in Upper Nile State say calm has returned to the county following the weekend's clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and armed civilians. County authorities say scores were injured with two in critical conditions. Mamer Abraham Kwot reports from Malakal.
South Sudan People's Defense Forces and armed civilians clashed in Nasir County on Friday. Jacob Chual, coordinator of Sudan People's Liberation Army in Opposition, or SPLA-IO, says 7 people were killed and 13 wounded, while 6 SSPDF officers were captured. Chual says SPLA-IO forces and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces have reached an agreement in Nasir to stop fighting.
Yeah, the type of the part of civilian, they have 2 people was already dead. 2 people were dead, and also plus 1 who was wounded, then he dead. They become 3 plus 4 They are 7 in number. And also they wounded 13 people from civilian. And again also from that side, why I'm captured, still at the CDF also.
Nialgat Kwath, a clinical officer in Nasir County Hospital, says they received 7 wounded civilians with 2 severe cases.
The cause of this situation is all about this government project. They came out and they found you sitting somewhere around in the bush. Finally, they went and attacked those men. And this is the fighting is immediately occurred. Around 7 casualties or around 7 wounded in the city in the hospital. In which 2 of them are most serious wounded, but the rest of the 5 are very light wounded. They have made the case. But 2 cases are serious cases.
However, the commissioner of Nasir County, Galwag Leo, says 10 people were wounded during the clashes, including a UN officer and 2 women. He says he does not have any report of any death toll on the side of SSPDF. Leo says the White Army are civilians who protect their families. He says the solution to the recurring conflict in Nasir will be replacing the SSPDF forces with unified forces.
They are there with their family, and whenever something happens, they have to defend the family. That is the reason why you call them White Army, because they have the gun at home. The only solution, unless maybe the current forces are going to be replaced with the unified forces, that should be the only solution, which we actually, the civilians, requested. They have submitted their request to the national and the state government so that these forces can be replaced with unified forces that comprise with a different community, so that they can be able to respect the order of their commander.
SSPDF's spokesperson Lul Roy Kong released a statement saying 4 SSPDF officers were killed and 3 others wounded in the clashes. Lul blames the commissioners of Nasir and the governor of Upper Nile State for not bringing a lasting solution to the conflict in Nasir. Lam Lul, coordinator for the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Nasir County, says 18,000 people were displaced by the clashes. He says discussions are ongoing between the Office of Nasir County Commissioner and the Army to settle the dispute.
The population that was affected, like 18,000, but we have received a small number of IDC. They come back. Then generally the situation has returned to its normal. No any other incident being recorded. Communication also between the county authority as well as also military. Management also is still ongoing.
In October 2024, at least 17 people were killed in Nasir after the SSPDF and armed civilians clashed. UNMISS, whose soldier was injured in the weekend clashes, says it will release its statement about the recent incident soon. James Bacha, Upper Nile State's Minister of Information, says the national government will send a high-level delegation to Nasir. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Court, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
From Malakal, we move to Nairobi, where since June 2024, a series of mass protests took place in Kenya. 82 cases of alleged forced disappearance have been recorded, according to the Kenya National Human Rights Commission. It's yet to be confirmed who is behind the abductions. VOA Nairobi Bureau Mariama Diallo spoke to 2 brothers who say they were abducted for 32 days.
It's here in the Kitengela town neighborhood, about an hour away from central Nairobi, that Aslam Longton and his brother Jamil say they were abducted. Earlier that day in August, Aslam says he felt uneasy and noticed unfamiliar people were watching him. The brothers were riding together by car when things unraveled.
That first corner, there was a Toyota Vix parked there, opened the old doors, so I cannot pass there. So I reversed the car. I come this place. When I entered this place, there was a Subaru come and blocked me here. And Toyota Axio blocked me at behind of there.
The brothers alleged they were approached by heavily armed men they described as appearing to be police officers and asked to switch off their car. Once again, here is Aslam.
They opened the car, removed me at the steering, took me very fast to the Subaru.
Jamil Longton says he was not meant to be taken away that day. But when he pressed the officers, even suggesting to call the neighborhood's police station, they refused to introduce themselves.
I kept on asking them, who are you? Where are you taking my brother? I told them, I'll call the OCS Kitengela police station to ask him if he's aware of whatever you're doing. When I attempted to call the OCS, my phone was confiscated by them. I was slapped, my phone switched off, and I was also bungled into the Subaru.
The brothers say they were handcuffed, blindfolded, taken to a location, and held there for 32 days. Amnesty International and Kenya National Commission on Human Rights confirmed the accounts by the two men and say it's similar to the treatment of other abductees. KNHCR's Ernest Cornell.
Number one, they are telling us that they were denied food. They were kept in handcuffs for days. They were stripped naked and they were made to lie on concrete floors.
Aslam says he was taken due to his participation in the nationwide youth-led Gen Z protest last year against a proposed bill that would have increased taxes. The protest expanded into a call for an end to corruption and for the president to resign. The bill was eventually withdrawn. Aslam's brother didn't take part in the protest, but they say they were both repeatedly questioned about its funding source during their captivity. Rights groups accused the Kenyan police of using excessive force against protesters and in some cases abducting government critics. Police denied the allegations. The police also said that they had credible evidence criminal gangs had infiltrated the protests and planned to take advantage. In December, following more protests in Nairobi to demand the police produce the missing people, President William Ruto condemned the spike in disappearances.
Any criminality must be investigated. Whether undertaken by citizens or criminals or undertaken by the police, it must be investigated.
Our requests for comments from the National Police Service were not answered. Mariama Jalu, VOA News, Nairobi.
Persons living with HIV/AIDS say they are worried after the only organization supporting them is affected by President Donald Trump's signed executive order freezing U.S. foreign development assistance for 90 days to evaluate programmatic efficiencies and consistency with U.S. foreign policy. U.S. Secretary of State say there is a waiver that allows life-saving assistance. For VOA News, Patricia Ibasi Tops reports from Juba.
30-year-old Margaret Jokudu was diagnosed with AIDS in 2010 and has been living with the disease for the past 15 years. She says she has been surviving on little earnings from working as a volunteer at Juba Teaching Hospital. She says she is worried about how to support her children and family after President Donald Trump signed executive order freezing U.S. foreign development assistance for 90 days.
Seriously, since we had that, our heart break, really, the funding help us. First of all, it's about our life cycle, about the drugs, ARVs. And secondly, the funds also help us the way how we as the volunteers, we help, we reach out to the community and help people who are living with HIV, who are still stigmatized and traumatized. Due to these funds, really we reach them, but now everything have blocked.
Abala Victor Steven, age 42, has lived with HIV for 9 years and is dependent on the non-profit National Empowerment of Positive Women United, which supports people living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan. He says he is devastated by how life is going to be for him and many others who depend on the National Empowerment of Positive Women United for support.
The organization really helped us because I'm continuing with my drug. But now, when the organization stops, then it is going to affect us. Maybe if the funding are not there, then the medicine will be finishing. Then how are we going to survive? It's going to affect us. The funding which we are getting is helping us. Like for us who are renting here in Juba, because I came from far. Now I'm going to be chased out. Even my children are not going to educate.
Angelina Doki, age 45, is another South Sudanese living with HIV. She is a mother of three children and has lived with the disease since 2004. She says the HIV/AIDS nonprofit organization has been supporting her.
It affects us, all of us, because of how we used to pay our school fees. With that money, we used to support our orphans living with HIV/AIDS, paying them in school. The donors used to pay the orphans in school. And for us women living with HIV/AIDS also supporting our children.
Evelyn Letio Unziboki is the executive director for National Empowerment of Positive Women United. She says the U.S. funding freeze has affected critical programs supported by the United States Presidency Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, across the country. She says the funding freeze is a wake-up call to the government to be independent in supporting health services.
As the network of people living with HIV in South Sudan, we believe this is a call to our government and an eye-opener not to depend on only foreign aids. We therefore urge our government to, one, take immediate action in filling the gaps left by the freeze on foreign aids. Two, inject more domestic funds to strengthen fight against HIV epidemic.
According to the National Empowerment of Positive Women United, South Sudan, with an estimate of nearly 200,000 individuals living with HIV, relies heavily on international assistance for staying alive. PEPFAR's contribution has been pivotal in ensuring access to treatment, prevention, and care services. PEPFAR's contribution has been pivotal in ensuring access to treatment, prevention, and care services. In 2022, the estimated HIV prevalence of people aged 15 to 49 was 1.9%. However, a survey of female sex workers in Juba found an estimated HIV prevalence of 37.8%. 6,100 people aged 15 and older died from AIDS. For VOA News, I'm Ibase Patricia Tops from Juba.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday, February 17, 2025. On behalf of my colleague Kwame Ofori and engineer Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
The third Monday in February is President's Day in the United States, originally meant to celebrate George Washington, the country's first president. Since 1968, the holiday has also honored Abraham Lincoln. Today it serves as a recognition of all of the nation's presidents. The observance began as a celebration of George Washington's February 22nd birthday. More than any other figure of his time, Washington guided the future United States through the Revolutionary War and its aftermath, the six-year conflict that ended the country's colonial beginnings and set it on its new path as a representative democracy. Indeed, Washington is frequently called the father of the country, and not just because he was a successful military leader. Truthfully, his actions in post-war civilian life set a precedent for all those who followed him in the country's highest office. He put the nation on a sound financial footing and led the United States of America through the initial labor pains that quickly gave birth to a stable, democratic, and lawful government. By leaving office voluntarily after 2 4-year terms, and by ensuring the peaceful transfer of power to the leader elected to succeed him, George Washington set an important precedent for all future presidents. Were it not for Washington's guidance, there is a good chance that the United States would not have developed into the country it is today. Similarly, Abraham Lincoln, whose birthday falls on February 12th, maneuvered the United States through the Civil War, a conflict that could easily have seen the country break up. But Lincoln's ability to consolidate public opinion in the northern states and rally political consensus around the need to abolish slavery resulted in the defeat of the secessionist states and eventually united the country as never before. Where prior to the Civil War, the United States was just that, a collection of strong political entities united under a relatively weak central government, the country that emerged from 4 years of bloody fighting stood united under a strong central government. George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were wartime leaders who recognized the indispensable need for a united people under a strong government. The United States has boasted a number of outstanding leaders, and to be honest, a handful that left much to be desired. But none had the impact of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Today, we celebrate their memory and honor those who upheld their legacy through the centuries since.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.